Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like months-long offers of low commission. At BetDaq, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDaq is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDaq, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Sunderland drew 1-1 with Luton Town yesterday in a massive promotion battle. And to dissect the game, I've got lifelong Sunderland fan George Forster. How are you doing, George?
Fine, thank you.
We also have BBC Newcastle's Nick Barnes. How's things?
All good, thank you.
And Alex, who's got no title.
Yeah, Alex in the corner with no accolades, but he's here anyway. Yeah, I'm fine and dandy.
I like how you've got a jumper that says philosophy.
Yeah, it's from my undergrad.
Yeah.
So exactly.
We expect some philosophical answers today.
Yeah. Well,
looking beyond the football.
You've not got any yet, so I wouldn't keep your hopes up.
Right, we'll jump straight into the game. So Sunderland lined up, John McLaughlin in nets, Lugo 9 right back, Jack Baldwin and Tom Flanagan centre backs, Reece James left back. Midfield, Mickey Ock and Power with a front four of Maguire, McGeady, Gooch and Wyke. Most notable was no Josh Madger, which I'm sure we'll talk about once we get going properly. But Sunderland took the lead through Maguire early in the first half. It's a good finish, good work from Gooch in the build-up. Then second half, Luton got a penalty when Flanagan was deemed to have fouled Danny Hilton, which we have studied now here in the studio and still can't understand why that was a foul. But again, more on the referee later. Later in the game, Hilton was sent off for elbowing Baldwin. Collins scored the penalty as well. McGeady then hit the bar and Wyke headed a rebound over, which if he just had a bit more composure, he probably would have put that one away. And then Maguire was sent off in injury time for, I've wrote an alleged stamp, but I don't know if that was actually the case. So there's lots to digest, but I think the first place, the logical place to start is the penalty. Nick, I'll throw this one to you. Was it a penalty to Luton?
Still bemused by the decision. Watched it again. I still can't see an instant in the penalty area. We watched the build-up to the decision and the foul, and it looks like a foul on Maguire by McCormack, who was, I think, niggling away all afternoon at Maguire. I'm at a loss. I was at a loss during the game, and I'm still at a loss now to see how that was a penalty.
Anyone disagree?
No, I couldn't disagree at all.
Well, my eyesight should be better, or could be better, but I was staggered to think that we got a penalty. It seemed a poor decision from the referee.
Yeah.
But as to the other one, there was just such a group of people and I didn't know what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
You know, but I think, you know, all the time when I keep going to matches, all these matches, and always seem to need that second goal as a cushion. You know, all right, they get a goal, but that's great. You've still got your 3 points, you know. But
I think the midfield yesterday, it was fair to say, were quite wasteful.
Yes.
Max and Dylan seemed to struggle on the ball. We didn't really have that authority.
I was so disappointed because, again, why is it we seem to be so small? You know, I've always lamented all the time for years and years since losing Big Sam and things like what a bigger lad's in. But we're too small. We get bullied here, there, everywhere, or get what I always say, we shouldn't mix it. When we try and mix it, you know, we don't rarely come out with a ball. Pity the player couldn't get rid of the ball that little bit earlier and find people. And I find our passing a bit disappointing. You know, you've got an opportunity. Also, a person in space, he doesn't get it soon enough. That's all I've got to say, really. But
I think Max and Dylan were very good in the tackle. But then when they had the ball, I think that's when the issue started to arise. I think, as is, I think, in my opinion, often been the case this season, we've been a lot better off the ball than we have been on it. You know, the final ball has been found wanting for, I'd say, the past five or six games.
I think,
you know, I think in midfield, as we've lamented, we're not, you know, there are players in the team who I think they've got a decision to make when they're so far up the field, and between an option A and an option B, you know, they seem to choose the one which is going to sort of reap the least rewards. I think Gooch, in my opinion, is the biggest culprit. I think you've got a few others in there who you know, aren't squeaky clean. I think that's the biggest sort of fundamental issue going in the team at the moment. Depending on whether you're a glass full or a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of person, you know, on one hand you can say, yeah, okay, but you know, we've gone 35 games, you know, scoring in each one at least. But then on the flip side of that, okay, but we've scored literally one goal in the past five games, you know. And as George says, there's so many games when we're just crying out for that second goal, and no one can be the man of the hour to go and get it. I think with Madja, obviously, you know, with that rather sort of ominous sudden illness, you know, you wonder, are you going to get the man that's going to get the second goal?
I think for me, that's eight games where Sunderland haven't played well. So that's 1-0 against Walsall in the FA Cup. I think that's where it started. Beat Bristol Rovers 2-1. That wasn't a great performance. We lost against Portsmouth. We did all right, 10 men. Well, that was really the deciding factor. Beat Bradford 1-0, shouldn't have beat them. Drew 1-1 with Shrewsbury, poor. Beat Blackpool 1-0, tight game, could have went either way. Drew with Charlton, good first half, poor second. Drew yesterday with Luton. So for me, it's worrying now. That's a long period of time to go and not play well. And well, look, actually, I've lost more.
You know, I was watching yesterday thinking, right, they've gone 1-0 up. They have got this problem of scoring the second goal and giving themselves a cushion, or at least a bigger chance of going on to win the game. But I thought, well, if you can get through 1-0, and even if you get to the end of the season, you've won eight games, 1-0 to get you up, I'd take that. But they didn't, you know, the penalty, the equaliser, you know, the 2 points dropped again when they're in a winning position. I'm loath to say that they're in a, you know, bad position, so to speak, because they're third in the table.
We're still in pole position.
Exactly, with a game in hand. And to have only lost two games all season is a remarkable record. And to have scored in every game is a remarkable record. But at the same time, there's part of you thinking they could do better. They could be pushing on. They should be actually in the second half of the season becoming a team that's looking a little bit more dominant in games, looking like they're going to beat the teams that they should be beating. I mean, no disrespect to your Shrewsbury, your Bristol Rovers, etc., but they should be beating these teams, and they should be beating them fairly comfortably because of the personnel they've got. I mean, you've got McGeady, you've got White coming back. You've got McGeoch, if he can get him back to how he was in pre-season. You know, that the ability's in there. His decision-making is questionable at times. And at the moment, match sharpness for the likes of Watmore and Wyke is probably a little bit of an issue. But it's difficult, because while they're still in there and still in with a shout and still looking like, you know, they are a difficult team to beat, if they're not necessarily a team that are winning games, you feel that they're obviously going to have a chance.
Yeah, you look at the team you look at the manager, you look at everything that's going on in the club as it stands, and you do just think that, you know, there is a little bit more that we can get from these.
Again, the issue of Madja yesterday, you know, you can see where they really missed Madja yesterday, because there was a period in the second half when they were doing just what they should have been doing, is that bombarding Luton's defence, just throw balls in the box all the time, because if you do that, the defenders will make a mistake. And it's that sort of area where Madja would have been fantastic because he'll thrive on anything that drops to him in the penalty area. And there was a period of 10 minutes where they were throwing everything into the penalty area. And you were just hoping they could keep that momentum going and get the second goal, but it ebbed away again and Luton managed to weather that patch.
What do we think about Josh Madger? Do we believe the illness?
Well, I have to say at the beginning of the afternoon, when as soon as he wasn't in the squad and wasn't on the bench, alarm bells are ringing. Then we get the message that he was ill. I then spoke to someone who said, yes, he was at training on Thursday. He was definitely there on Friday. I spoke to Jack Ross after the game and said, is there anything sinister in the fact that he wasn't there? Jack's not one to make things up and was adamant. He was ill on Friday night and called the doctor. He was still not so well on Saturday morning, but they thought he might be okay, but he transpired. He wasn't. He was adamant he was there. And then George tells me, you saw Josh at the game yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think you have to accept that Jack was telling the truth, that he was there and he was ill, and that was the reason he missed the game.
And reports that he's potentially going to Germany?
I think there's perhaps the links being made with the agent who's already got three or four players, including Sancho, in Germany. I think there's a feeling as well that if Josh was to go anywhere with this agent, it may be abroad, and Germany would be the obvious suggestion because of those links. It's a difficult one. I know sort of Jack's sort of almost sort of it washes over him now because it's rumbling on and it's rumbling on, and he's always said that while Josh is here, his attitude seems to be good. He wants to play. He's got no issues about him being affected by everything that's going on, and that would seem to be the case because, in fact, you know, the last couple of weeks, Josh has probably played some of his best football this season because he's got White to play off. And, you know, if I was Stuart Donnelly, yeah, I'd be pulling my hair out wondering, you know, what's going to happen. But if I was Jack Ross, you'd just be hoping that, oh, let's hope he's here next weekend, because if he's here, I've got him to use and he's invaluable.
Well, I'm not very good in picking the players out now. Mm-hmm. I suppose my eyes really, and I've usually got somebody beside me that's so and so. If I can see the numbers, I'm all right. Mm-hmm. But the fellow who's number 8, who happens to be
McGeoch,
he catches my eye every game, and he seems to work his socks off, and he seems to have a good engine on him. You know, but what does upset me a bit, say, look, you know, hit the ball. Now, there's too many passes, in my opinion, in the modern game. And these little tight little groups when they get into, instead of, I mean, you've got the whole width of the field. The thing I was just saying to about when the players, when they're goalie, they all go to one side. Why not just get a winger to come out here and scatter up that side, hoping that the midfielder or the players will keep up? I mean, the other clubs seem to have it more tailor-made than us. You know, they seem to be come forward, four together. And I'm impressed with that, because you only hope that that they don't score when we're against us. But there seem to be, you know, very close things that happen. So,
I do agree about these goal kicks, and it's only happened in the last couple of seasons that the players drift like sheep on the right wing. I mean, what training manual have they all been reading that they do this? Because it does seem, as George says, you have a sway, you've got half the pitch is wide open. You think someone surely is going to grasp the metal here. And just if the keeper puts the ball out, and you've got your quickest players, make a break.
Pickford did it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I recall Pickford hitting the pass to the other wing where everyone was at that side.
I like that very much. Yeah. I do. And you do things like that because you pull their defence to pieces as well. No, I get disappointed with, you know, I think there's too far too many passes. Little tippy taps. Oh, you've got, you know, I like the long pass. Mind, I also criticise the goalkeeper. Why is high up in the sky? I always say, oh, there's the fella. I'll say to my friend here, look, who's going to head it? The person in the blue shirt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it comes back again quickly. You know, I wish if a goalkeeper should be capable of sort of keeping at a lower trajectory, and we'd probably get a chance. But there's always a big guy behind our players, and comes back to the
physicality.
As you say, they've been quite a small team for a while. I mean, I know last season, for the sake of this article that I was meant to write but never did, I was looking at like the average height of the Sunderland team, and at one point I'm sure it was around like 5'8", 5'9". You know, and that's below the average height of men in the UK.
You've got to be like Barcelona good to get away with that.
You do. In the Championship, absolutely.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, looked at yesterday's team. O'Nyan's not the tallest in the world. McGee.
Great header, though.
Gooch, yeah. I mean, look, O'Nyan, what he's got in energy and just a sheer enthusiasm is just...
He's my favourite player.
It's fantastic. I mean, I just... You know, for someone who'd never played right back before, you'd never know it. The ground he covers, and the energy levels he's got, the fitness levels he's got. I mean, from minute one to 95, 96, he's right on it. But he's not the biggest. But, you know, Catamol to come back in. So they aren't a big side. I mean, it's true. And they do lack that physicality, which does lead to teams, I think, bossing midfield sometimes. When you get a McCormack yesterday who's willing to put his elbow in here and sort of rough it up a bit. And that's why I think, you know, okay, Maguire's sometimes off his game, but he has got that extra bit of physicality that's perhaps lacking. Mm. Although it's, you know, want sometimes to go a little bit over the top.
Yeah, I think in the tackle, as far as physicality goes, in the tackle we're all right. I think a lot of times we're beating teams in the ground war, but then when balls are over the top, you know, you are essentially sending every long ball to pick out Wyke if you're in that part of the field and you're struggling otherwise. I don't have any sort of stats
I think
for it, but I'm sure we must lose stats. The majority.
The key stat for me is I think we've conceded 8 goals from open play. So that suggests that we are a very good team you know, when it's simply a case of the ball being, you know, a battle on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's the set pieces.
We
all know that this team is not good enough at set pieces, which is the physicality because they can put defenders in the box. Mm. And the amount of times this season, particularly at home, balls have came in, free kicks, and we've let a free header. It seems to happen every game.
The indirect free kick that Shrewsbury scored when they went 1-0 up, like, you know, it looked like a good header, but in reality it was made very easy by just the lack of aerial presence and marking. Yeah, but obviously I think they both go hand in hand. You know, you can stay with your man, but, you know, if he's head and shoulders above you, your mate will not be there.
It makes you
not
wonder
in those situations.
If... We've got Charlie Wyke playing up front now. I think they're going to bring in another striker. Let's just say that he is about 6 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
If they went three at the back, played Baldwin, Flanagan, new guy Jimmy Dunn, who's about 6'4", then suddenly they look very physical and we're going to be able to deal with that aerial battle. But at the minute, the games that you're talking about there against Shrewsbury, we're probably playing with the two centre-backs who are tall and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's the issue that the set pieces at the other end, they're not scoring goals from them.
No,
because the corners are terrible.
You know, you look at every team. Luton was an example yesterday. The back four, they've got goals between them, but Baldwin and Flanagan, I think, have got two between them this season. So you know, when you get into that position, you want to be bullying defenders as well, which they're not able to do.
We've talked a little bit about Honeyman before, but how much are we missing him at the minute? Because
it looks like they are missing him at the moment.
I think
just the energy he puts in around the penalty area.
But he's one of the players that everyone's been criticising this and last season. Now he's been gone, though, I think people are beginning to go, oh, actually, he's far better than we thought he was.
Gave him credit for it, but because he does buzz around, that means a nuisance. I mean, it's that issue. It's the Watmore issue, isn't it? I mean, Watmore's decision-making, his final ball is there to be, I suppose, criticised. But what he does do is draw defenders and allows the team to create space. That's where Madger and Wyke and McGeady, etc., should thrive in those situations when you've got players with pace and that ability to draw players out and just, you know, make life a little bit easier around the penalty area. But there's also decision making then when you've got to capitalise on that.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing that as soon as Honeyman's gone, we're suddenly all starting to miss him. But as well, that sort of mantle of maybe just picking on a midfield player to allegedly be told he's not doing enough seems to have passed to McGeoch. Because I see a lot of people having a go at McGeoch now and saying, you know, oh, yeah, but what's he doing, though? You know, like, well, he's there, but what's he doing? You know, he's a bit quiet, you know, he's not really in the game. And that was Honeyman before. Yeah. I mean, McGeoch's essentially taken on his role, and it's funny how whoever gets that role is doing a lot of the legwork for the rest of the team, but because they're not putting the final cross in, they're not finishing, they're not making the save, they're not making the last-ditch tackle, you know, they're in that, you know, that literal middle ground in midfield, they're not getting the recognition that other team members are getting. So once Honeyman's gone, it falls to McGeoch. If McGeoch got injured in that role, then felt the Catamol. Yeah, you'd be criticising Power. I think Catamol probably gets away with not getting that because he's renowned for his tackles, so you look out for his tackles. But,
yeah,
you know, Honeyman and McGeoch don't have a trademark as of yet. So if it's players like those, then they, you know, they do get caught out for that. And I think, as you say, if it was Max Power, absolutely, it would fall to him next. You know, it's
right.
It's the least notorious role.
The most disappointing thing that I find is tackles from behind. You know, and getting yellow, unnecessary yellow cards. Look, as far as I was told that, which I can't remember whose manager it was, I think it was Keane, when he was getting a lot of yellow cards, he was told, if the player's got past you, you forget about that. Somebody else has got to pick him up. Not you, because you're going to get a yellow card. If you're going to go charging back and trip him up, you're going to get a yellow card. And for a while, I think he wasn't getting booked, and then he sort of to a few games was recently, you know, tackled from behind. Don't do it.
Yeah, it's like they don't. I'd realise that the professional foul, I suppose, is what you call it. The amount of times we have been done with them this season, and you do, I think Max Power's red card against Oxford earlier this season was a prime example of that.
Yeah.
They got past him. Mm. He put in a stupid tackle.
It was on the halfway line. Yeah. So.
You know, were they going to score? Probably not.
That's right. It might be different if you're probably near stopping probably a goal or something like that, maybe. But then again, you take the risk of a red, yellow card and red card.
Mm-hmm. So, seen that with Leuven's got sent off at Portsmouth. Oh, yeah. Similar.
Yeah.
A challenge he didn't have to make.
Mm.
But that's often the bane of, you know, the managers say, don't make those challenges in positions where the team's not really a threat. You know, why do you make challenges like that on the halfway line? Why do you make challenges like that when you can shepherd a player out into the corner? You know, fair enough, if you're making a challenge in the penalty area and you're 6 yards from the goalkeeper, that's another issue. But making those sort of challenges out in the open, you know, in the middle, it is sort of wasteful.
One idea I want to float by everyone, I don't know how people feel about it, but would moving Luke 09 to behind Charlie Wyke or with Charlie Wyke makes sense? You had played a very similar position at Wickham with Akinfenwa. If we're going to lose Madger, then why not play 09 just off? You've got his energy. You know he'll track back. If you win the game, you can be the extra midfielder. Adam Matthews goes in at right back, and he's been brilliant there this season. Keeping 09 in the team, I think, is essential. So why not think about maybe putting him far further forward? We've seen he's finishing. That goal he scored at Charlton was brilliant. Shrewsbury as well, brilliant goal.
I know that's an idea. It does. I know exactly where you're coming from, but I will throw it back again when you were talking about Wyke and another striker coming in. If you play two up front and you play three at the back, you have to lose someone then in the middle. Yeah. Who do you lose?
And then to
accommodate Onayen now in that role, because I think Onayen, you're absolutely right. Onayen loves getting forwards. You could see him playing as a right wing back in the system because he has got that drive and determination, and he's got a good finish and he'll score goals. But then where do you accommodate, you know, do you want to sit Matthews on the bench then? So can you find a system whereby you play the two up front, Onayen in that midfield, Matthews is your right back? Can it be,
it's,
can you do it?
Thing.
Who do you lose?
Yeah.
Do you lose McGeady? Do you lose Maguire? Do you lose Gooch? Who do you actually lose in
options,
the system?
Isn't it? Because yesterday,
it's great to have the options.
Our options on the bench yesterday were poor.
Well, four defenders,
Kim
Pionka,
who's a kid. And obviously, Oviedo was the only real game changer.
Although, the more I see of Kim Pioca, the more I sort of like his
directness.
Wildness.
Yeah, he's raw. He reminds me very much of McLean and Watmore when they.
But he's not scared. He's not scared to throw himself in there. He's not scared to make a challenge and have a go. And I like that.
And that's exactly what you want. You want a youth player who's prepared to come off the bench and think, right, I've got nothing to lose here. Worst case scenario, I don't get past the 26-year-old man. Best case scenario, I beat him and all the bums are off the seat. You know, that's what you want. You know, you want as many young lads to breathe life into the team off the bench every now and then as possible. You know, it's just great to see. But another thing I want to come back to as well, I think what we've probably gone over for this sort of like this 20 minutes or so are probably the two only real weaknesses of the team, but at the same time, two very basic ones. I mean, you used the word poor earlier, Connor, to describe how we've been in some games. And I think that's probably quite an equivocal sort of word. You know, we're poor in relation to where we think we should be. You know, we are not a poor team, absolutely not. You know, we haven't lost a home all season. We've scored in every game. You know, those are not the accolades of a poor team. But that being said, you know, where could we be if we knew not to, as George rightly points out, not to sort of like tackle from behind when you absolutely don't need to, when there's, you know, when you could just leave it for the next man to pick him up. You know, we've got plenty of good players who are good in the tackle. So there's that. There's
worst,
you know,
discipline in the league. Worst,
yeah, exactly. There's very poor discipline and a lack of end product. And I think that's, I mean, you think how many points we've thrown at those two things. You know, how many 1-1s could have been 2-1s or 3-1s if you had a, you know, another outlet or a just something in the mechanism to get you those, you know, extra goals. How many points would you have not dropped had it have not been for daft red cards? You know, could you have beaten Portsmouth? They didn't look that good when we played them. I thought we could have got a result there.
At half time, they looked the problem more likely to win that game. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's just how I see it. You know, you've got two issues to address there. So I think that the first one is just a case of mentality. It's a case of, you know, like a very firm injection of common sense. You know, again, as George says, that Roy Keane mentality of, look, if you've lost your man, then, you know, don't take it to your ego. You know, let the next bloke get him. If you've lost him, you've lost him. If he's megged you and he's 5 yards past you, leave him. You know, let the next man get him. And obviously the other remedy is either to keep Madger or to get someone in who's going to do as good of a job, if, you know, if you can dream, if not better. Will Grigg.
Will Grigg.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think Jack Ross's answer to this would be that we've got to accept it's a League One team, mm-hmm. and that the reason that Maguire's in it is because he's talented and he's potentially could have been a player at a much higher level, but because of those weaknesses in his character and the inconsistency, that's why he's playing League One football. And the young lads in the team are learning, and they're so prone to those mistakes. And so it's a sort of what he's tried to gel together is this disparate group of players who are either underachievers or they're young and learning and will be achievers in the long run, but they're all thrown together and they are playing League One football.
Yeah.
You know, they're playing the third tier of football. So they are almost by the nature of that inherently going to make mistakes and be prone to those errors.
And we have to accept that. I think if you start throwing a Mardy just because you're not top of the league, then I think you've become very ungrateful very fast if you think where they've been the past two seasons. You know, you've got to just give it time. If you're knocking about second and third for large parts of the season, I think you could be in a lot worse of a situation.
And bear in mind that Portsmouth, Luton, Barnsley, Charlton are all teams that have been together for at least two seasons. This is the first season that Jack Ross has had this team together, whereas all those managers have had these teams for at least two. Mm-hmm.
Final one, really, on yesterday. Actually, I still want to talk a little bit about the two, the Maguire red card and the potential red card for Collins. But before we jump on to that, bench was weak yesterday. Spoke about that. How many players do we need? You know, I think that answer's changed for me now. I thought two. I thought we needed a centre back and a striker, and I think we've obviously brought in a centre back, but I still think we need two. And I think one of them needs to be a striker. I think the other one potentially is a central midfielder.
It's interesting that because of the Embleton situation, that Embleton went back to Grimsby on the basis that there are too many midfielders in the squad. And
I know they're expecting
he wouldn't get a game.
I think Jack really likes Ethan Robson as well.
Yeah, and Robson's not far from coming back. So I think he's, again, I mean, I think Jack Ross showed at the beginning of the season he's prepared sometimes to bite the bullet and wait, like Charlie Wyke. And I think this is the situation with Robson. I think he's feeling that if I can just hold out for a couple of weeks and Robson's back in the frame, then you've got, you know, potentially, and I like Ethan Robson. I can see why he likes him and what he can bring to the team.
He's brilliant in a Cheshire trade game.
Yeah.
He was absolutely, I think, Notts County.
Yes, and I think if you can get him back in, the only worry is you've got to get him back up to speed quickly because he's been out a fair while now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, myself and every other Sunderland fan in the world would agree that another striker is ideal. You know,
it's ideal. It's 100% necessary.
Yeah, irrespective of where Madger goes, you know, I think we just need those numbers. But I think we don't need any more midfielders. If we need anything, we need another creative wide player.
We could maybe do? I don't. Ryan Christie was linked at the start of the season. A player like him who can plug a few holes, but you know he has goals in his game. And at the minute, I look at my central midfielders, and I don't see goals. You know, Max Powers dry. I think he scored one goal for her. he constantly tries their long range shots.
Yeah, and they just don't, they're not coming off.
Yeah, and I just look at the centre midfield, I'm like, they don't look like scoring a goal, you know.
I think the comparison was watching Charlton and watching Lyle Taylor. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah. He was absolutely excellent.
His strength through the middle, and he's prepared to drop right back and almost act as a midfielder to get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then because he's got such strength, he can win it in midfield and has got the ability to take it on into the penalty area. Big miss not getting him in the mm-hmm. summer. I can understand why they didn't, but it's a shame because if you had a player like that in the team, I think they would be in a, they probably would be in the top two and been mm-hmm. would have consolidated that now.
Absolutely.
Anything else, Adam?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that we are probably quite overstaffed in midfield as things stand, you know, and I can get that he's kept Embledon at Gateshead. You know, Grimsby.
Yeah. Not at Gatty's Head, that's my sat-nav says.
We've got, for me, a lot of midfielders, and, you know, they aren't perhaps the most prolific goal scorers, but they're all doing a job for me, at the very least. You know, they're all good tacklers, they're all decent passers of the ball. Your bad decisions come from your front men, and, you know, you get the odd goal from, you know, Max Power's shots aren't coming off, but Maguire's are, you know, so there's always that. But I think, you know, even if you were to get injuries to those, you've got youth players, you know, in abundance that are already here. As you say, Ethan Robson was great against Notts County. You know, we've seen enough from him to suggest he could be good. Certainly Jack Ross has. I think Luke Molyneux looked excellent when we played Wolves last season. You know, I mean, they weren't so much on the beach as they were setting up a cocktail stand and serving margaritas. But, you know, he was good nonetheless. And I just think you've got so many of these good players that I really wouldn't worry about midfield. I think you're very all right there. But a nice wide player, I think. Someone who's running at the man. And he's got two ways he can go. He can cut inside. He can send the ball across the park. And he just makes the call that's the right one. I think that's just what you're missing at the moment. I think the lads that we've got now just maybe aren't quite doing it. You know, there's a goal a game. But as we've said, you know, if you get someone who's a bit sort of like who's as sharp up here, I'm pointing to my temple for those who can't see, which is everyone. But yeah, someone who's a sharper, you know, in the old noggin as they are sort of like, you know, like on the ground.
But that's it. But you said it. They're getting a goal a game, which is great, brilliant. But they're conceding a goal a game.
Yeah.
And that's why mm-hmm. you need someone there. Get goals.
That's totally, I think to concede a goal every other game is fairly acceptable for a team pushing for promotion, but, you know, scoring one every game really isn't. You know, I don't think any team's, no team goes up just winning 1-0 every game.
I think it's indicative of this league as well, because, yeah, there are maybe one or two bad teams in the league, but on the whole, then none of them are really bad teams. No. They've all got the ability to cause teams mm-hmm. problems in the division. So you always know that whoever you come up against, they might be 19th, mm-hmm. they might be 20th in League One, but they will cause you problems. And because of the nature of the league, they'll score goals.
Yeah.
So you do need to be happy. You want that ability in your team to know you can go out there. If you do concede a goal, you will come off the pitch having scored more goals.
Every team at some point has given us a goal.
Mm.
You know, most of the games that we've won, we've not won comfortably. I can think of Scunthorpe and Rochdale at home.
Scunthorpe should have had a penalty early on.
They did. That's true.
Every team, and this is even in the Premier League, Championship, League One, at every level, every team has something to mm-hmm. offer, because that's why they play at that level. So,
you know, I think I would just like fantasizing about what it must be like to be a team that wins every week.
Like
probably
Man
makes
City.
Us think that we just go and beat teams like Burton 9-0 every week. No, but that's not the reality of it. You know, they'll be, even a team like them, they'll be getting like pushed at home by Burnley and Huddersfield. They'll win ultimately, because they're the better team, but you know it won't feel as comfortable as just sitting there and watching your team and just dance around them for 90 minutes.
And it's tactically challenging because teams are coming to the stadium alight with a tactic in mind to smother.
Yeah,
and it works. And then obviously when you go to away games, it's their cup final because the atmosphere is like a cup tie, and that changes the dynamic as well. So there's a unique set of challenges for Sunderland this season.
Yeah,
which wouldn't be the same set of challenges for whoever comes up from League Two next season and is going for promotion next mm-hmm. season in League One, because the dynamic is completely different.
We need a bit of luck as well.
That Everyone
magical
needs a bit
word.
Of luck. Yeah.
The red cards. So we're talking about these before, but I thought I'd touch back on them there. Second red for Collins.
I thought it was worse than the first one. Actually.
I mean, that was a very blatant elbow.
No, it was worse than the first
bottled
one.
And I just think the referee bottled it. I just think he felt he'd sent one off, mm-hmm. he couldn't send two.
Maguire, red card.
I watched it and I still can't see that that's a red card. No. I think if they do appeal it, they've got a fair chance of
if you've got the Max Powell one back against Walsall.
To my mind, he make this a strong challenge on McCormack, but they're both in for a strong challenge. All he's trying to do is get his foot on the ball under the body of McCormack, and if he made contact with the player, it wasn't a malicious or intended stamp on him. And in fact, I'm not even sure if he does make contact in that sense with McCormack.
It looks like he misses him.
I think he looks like he misses him. So I'd be surprised.
I mean, McCormack looked like the biggest sinner of the two to me.
I think he was agitating all game. He was he's that sort of player.
McCormack was one
of fouls. He was, and he'd wrapped himself around ball. Winnips him that. Yeah, I just think, you know, in the light of the game, I think the referee taking his eye off the fact that McCormack was as much an instigator through the game of a lot of those instances. I just think it was a bad decision.
Most inept refereeing performance of the season, I think I tweeted yesterday.
Well, there's been a lot.
Fair?
I think the worst of it is because of his background, that makes it even worse. I mean, I can accept that the refereeing in League One has not been great this season, but when you get a referee of that standard who comes in and proves to be even more inept, the most inept that we've seen this season, that is going some.
I think it's at best it's disappointing, and at worst it's infuriating. It's just bad all around.
Yeah,
bad time.
There's only one referee I like this season. That was the Blackpool away game. I thought he was good.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah, he had like authority.
Yeah,
bit of Mike Dean about him. Right, we're gonna
try and remember who it was. Now, is it
celebrity refs?
I can't remember who it was.
I was thinking he was good. Darren England or something. I'm trying to think who. No, I can't remember.
Final one before we talk to George about your life support in Sunderland. Fortunately, at Rogue Report, we are sponsored by BetDAC now. And yesterday, I was in the box. It was a sellout, a corporate sellout. And have you ever been in a box?
Have I been in a box? No, Connor, I've not been in a box.
No.
But you have. Keep talking. I feel bad now.
No, it's nice going up there, though.
Yeah. I bet it is. Yeah, it's nice and cosy while I'm sat in my
lovely and cosy.
Sad plastic seat.
Yeah, it's a leather seat as well.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Ooh, lucky for some.
Armrests.
Yeah.
No, it's good being in there. Yeah. Thanks to the BetDAC guys for letting me in and giving me a free drink.
You ever read Animal Farm, Connor?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's you. We were all in the same boat, and then suddenly some Connors are more equal than others. That's how it goes.
I do that in GCSE history or A-level history.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDAC, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDAC is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDAC, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Right, classic. George, I'm going to treat this as an open forum for everyone. I've got some questions written down, but I want Alex and Nick to throw out their own questions. And Nick, you might have stories that you know need to be told more so than I know. So we'll start off, though, with a nice and easy one for you, George. You started the supporters club in 1965.
Yes.
What made you do that?
Well, what happened was formed in 1965. The directors were very, very worried because there's another organisation, the Sunderland Football Supporters Club, and that the brewery did had a building, the Clippership, I think it was called, and they had a meeting, and the mayor of Sunderland came in the Salvation Army building, which was the miners' place then, and there was a huge crowd. And there was three pals. I linked up with three pals because John's dead now, and you know the lad. And we all just knocked around together. We used to go down to the this was before we started the association, and we used to travel the lad out here on the buses there, and then I helped him run. If there's more than one bus, I'd help to run the bus. But the thing was, when I got to know the directors got worried about this organisation, got such strength. I mean, I got a membership card for it. So the directors really were panicked. I know this for a fact. But so they got all businessmen, the solicitor. Stanley Lambert was the solicitor, and he got in two local, Jack Allens. He got Billy Begg, a butcher. They were all businessmen of some sort. And so they had this, they were met in the main stand. I'm not sure if he had a mic in the main stand. And he put it over the club. We're going to build a home for the supporters, the Black Cat Club, which happened to be one of the best in the country. It was great, honestly. But we couldn't use it because the World Cup was on in 66. Well, prior to that, I got stopped on, I don't know whether motorways were then, I'm thinking 65, can't just remember. But anyway, these two guys came, one was Stan Lambert and one was Fred Stewart, the director at Sunderland Football Club. Stopped me. Would you like to come to a meeting down at Roker Park? And it's on this Tuesday night. So I went down there and they asked me various questions, you know, and would you like to come on board? I think they'd mind running the buses maybe, because I've been running the buses for Billy Curran, that was his name. And yes, I went down. I had to go outside and they co-opted me onto the meeting. And then they were talking about what do we get in? We're going to get a shop, because no club shop then. And I think we started off, well, we got an official badge, a little black cat, not a puma like they've got now, a little pussy cat. I think I've got one in there. And we started off with a metal badge, a tie, and programmes we used to get. But then, the pen, platinum pen. The thing about this platinum pen was they came in a gross, 144, and I took them to work, which employed 500 people on two shifts. I had no problem selling them. And then I came back for another box, saw the secretary, a man called Harold Howie. And at the next meeting, I think we held them every fortnight then. He said, "Mind, George is going to do a good job here. He sold two boxes of pens." Right, this what's the sprung on me. "Right, we're going to appoint you a sales manager." I said, "I've not a clue how to manage. I've never managed anybody like that before and anything. Don't you worry. Everything we'd buy in would be done by the committee." Well, this is the bit. 66 comes along. There was a World Cup short in Sunderland and they were selling up, you know, towards the end. And I spent all my holiday money, probably about 20 quid or something like that, on all things, pens where the footballer comes down, that you know, and things. And I've got tea towels made by Causeway in Ireland, Causeway Company or something. And I spent all my money. So when I went back, Harold Howie, he paid me the money. But I got a right rollicking. "You do not sell things on your own." We made a fortune on the things. But then, and I never mentioned the Russians, that this is it. Stan Lambert, "George," he said, "I want you to fill your bag full of stuff." He said, "We had key fobs made, all sorts of things. Badges, we had badges, because we've also got World Cup badges and stuff like that." And right, as we were coming in, George Taylor was coming out. "What are you doing out here, George?" I said, "Oh, the Russians have asked to see us." So, and when we went in there, they had these tables which we had assembled, like, and so the scarves and things like that, and helmet badges and things like that. And this Russian, the only money I took was 2 and 6 for a key fob. The rest was barter. Well, and pens. A load of pens. These shouldn't be, we had some cheap ones, but these good pens, you know, the things like that, you know, should have been red and white. But anyway, it was just odd how, can we give you some badges, Russian badges? They weren't all football, Yuri Gagarin and stuff like that. And won a few football ones, and had to work out, oh, how much is a ruble worth? 8 and 4 pence, I found out. 8 and 4 pence, fair enough, right? There's nobody looking at them, so we were going up in this lift. We're crammed in this lift, going up further up to this bloke's room. And John said, George, I'm frightened. What about if they kill us? I said, they won't bloody kill us, man. They wouldn't dare. But I said, because to be sent to Siberia. So this one was called the Clown, the Clown. Bottles of vodka. Why? I said, John, you have any idea how much it was? He could ask John how much a bottle of what it was worth. He'd like me, I wouldn't know. But then bottles of vodka and then badges. This big Russian, because they're all different sportsmen, mind. They weren't all football. They'd all come over. I gathered only got £8 to last a fortnight, so that's why I didn't see them very much of them. So this bloke, this big Russian come over. John says, didn't like the look of him, mind, George. I said, he looks a bit tough, doesn't he, John? So the only Russian I knew was, yes, no. Oh, no balance. So he grabs a load of my badges and he picks a load of pens up. I've got him to turn his hands over. Right, Aiden, yeah. I said, no balance. So he went redder and redder. He went back and I said, he brought some more badges. Okay. And well, I said to John, you know, these are bloody capitalists, man. They're getting 8 and 4 pence for them flaming pens. Only cost a bob. And I use that word capitalist. And then this clown says, capitalist. It was the funniest experience, honest to God. And John bought it. John got this Sputnik. You know, Sputnik on a wooden stand. He said, I would like that, John. I said, well, fair enough, you want that. But we ended up by all these... Then there was a Siberian bloke, a Mongolian. He wanted to go up to another in this room. And, you know, the wrap this in these greaseproof paper, you know, there's a roll of tin or something like that. And he brought these badges out. And it was... to send any of a Russian railway, Vladivostok railway, but it was a year ahead. It was a year ahead of that, I think. And also he brought out, he had 200 rubles in notes. I didn't want any notes. I didn't know. I just went for all these coins, kopecks and rubles and all sorts. I said, well, they might be fraud things, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, no. All these badges and all these kopecks and rubles. So eventually when I went to the bank with them, I saw the currency all the world over is very similar, around the small coin and what have you. So when I went to, it wasn't Barclays then, I think National thing, the bloke says, have you got any paper money, like? I said, no. I said, it's all coinage. He said, well, you can't take it. So he said, Cooks, I think, was on the other corner, went over there, same story. I said, I think your career's finished as a tournament seller. There's a sales manager, mind, George. You've got all this bloody copper and rubles and all these flaming badges. So anyway, my little pal, he used to take all these early photos, black and white photographs. He worked in the same factory as me. George, he said, I've got a good idea. He said, well, I'll get some card printed work with a black cat on the front and that. And he said, we'll mount them. We'll get the girls to sort them out from a kopeck to a ruble. Well, I still can't remember how we stuck them on, because I kind of just remember how we did that. And do you know what? I hadn't got any want to show anybody. We sell them for a quid. And all went. And the badges, we've got different coloured ribbons on. Some were half a crown. But some of these badges, like wrestlers' badges and all sorts, to go all right for weighing in, you know. You know what I mean, don't you, for scrap? And we've got everything. I took them to work. I did. We had a bomb. And that saved my bacon. But Another story is we've got these teddy bears, 2 foot teddy bears they were. They were made by Tebro in Bradford. Funny how I can remember that, isn't it? Can't forget names. But, and when I was living in Rokerbass Road, I used to get the bus at the Blue Bell to work at Pallion. And after, John and I got these teddy bears and we took them out to work because they're getting on near Christmas or something, and or some event anyway. Or maybe the cup final. That's another story, that might. But put them on the back of the bus. That's when you get on the back of the bus and put them on the back seat. I said to the conductor, I said, mind, I hope you're not going to charge for these, mate. I got rid of all the teddy bears, sold them for £5. But then we were coming, we knew that, the Italians. Oh, Fulham had sent some, did we want to buy some corn crakes? And they had a double ratchet on them, the metal plate on them. You bigger knock people's heads off with them. So, right, they came in and they stunk of concrete and they stunk of grease as well. They're covered with grease when you open them because they'll be used in the war, you see, and for air raids. So, brilliant idea, little John and I. Right, John, we'll take some of these home because I was living at Harrington. And I got all the grease off them and then hung them out outside to get the stink of creosote. I said, the Italians are coming. Forza Italia. I thought, oh, I wonder what the time will be. And I got some of the umbroil or painted them undercoat white on the metal plate and then put gloss on and just a few at a time, you know, and then got some umbroil oil. Forza Italia, Mazzola, and different names on. I said, the Italians go, crackers for these. Didn't work like that. Didn't work. All they wanted was World Cup Willy. And unfortunately, we got some transfers. Well, the club sent these down and they fitted on this metal plate. Got rid of them all. All these things. But all that time I spent hours after hours painting those down. Forza Italia, oh dear. But then San Lambert said, George, I want you and John to fill your car up because we had these brown bags. But then we'd got so much wooden huts in the ground and where we sold stuff. But then we'd got these 50 pence scarves, like silky stuff. And I'm just trying to think, they were poorly attended, mind, these games. They weren't all that. But we still had our huts. I remember getting the autograph of, had it for years, and so someone's already pinched me wallet. but that was it. And then we had to get out of where we were, out the office, and give it up to the club because they're using that as a ticket office as well. So there used to be a church in Rokerbass Road. We were in there. And Eddie Marshall, he was one of the club secretaries. And another lad who happened to be, he was only a boy then, Malcolm Bramley.
Yeah.
He was secretary. Malcolm Bramley.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Cluffy's I smash and blow up mine. I used to tell us stories about Brian Clough, which I knew I wanted to do myself as well. But Cluffy. But
is it true that you raised money for goalposts for the 1966-67?
Oh, that was the thing. £750. And when we got the bill, because Stan Lambert asked the chairman, what is Alan Brown? Sorry, I have to say this. He wasn't my man. I didn't particularly like him as a manager. He was so rude, I thought. I'll come to that a little bit. Yeah, so when we got the bill in, when I said £750, I said, there must be blooming gold plated, you know, because they were for the Washington Complex as well and for Roker Park. And then we had about 20-odd thousand members, you know, and the supporters. But to get in the Black Cat Club, you had to join that separately. And the secretary, my poor lad, he only had one eye. But if he didn't like you, you didn't get in. If the Black Cat Club, Stan Lambert would send two coachloads of tickets down to the various clubs, telling them no bother boots and no jeans. And it was a good club, well run, till later on when they weren't all the bar sales went to the bar, but the entertainment, we had the Dixieland, we had some great, we had a social group as well. They've got some good turns on, mind. Damn good turns. Because we had our own organist and drummer. And just good. Obviously, I would spend hour after hour down at that office at night. Had a key, typewriter, an old typewriter. And I used to send away, right away, all these clubs because we had loads of programmes, exchange programmes. We thought, well, I think we had the 92 league clubs at one time. And the shop got bigger. We had a 40-foot counter in the gym. And the souvenirs were at one end and the programmes the other. And there was always a fight. Here, you've gone past the other space and that. But had a wonderful staff. We had some. Oh, then we brought out a magazine called The Roker Row. Have you seen about mm-hmm. when he went up to six, I think, volume six. And darn good book it was. But there was another time when we got more huts around, the wooden huts in the ground. Oh, Send your ambulance. We got it kitted out, painted white, and filled it all with medical stuff. And then another time I had 4 nights hold of painting all the red. They came from TaylorMade, Durham, I think, these huts. And my wife was very pleased at the time painting them red and white, spent a fortnight on them. But we just will never be skint. I made sure of that. But because... And then, of course, I used to go away to all the matches, bag full of stuff, all gear, and I used to go around all the Sunderland buses. Anybody want a scarf, a hat and that? And I loved it. I just loved it going round. Plus the fact, when I used to go away to all these games, I was always in the number two bus, which left nearly at midnight. And a place we used to love to go to, mind, it was... The Cheshire Cheese. We all piled in there and we got to know these old couple because if we were anywhere near Manchester, we always went there. Always the Geordie boys. It didn't ever upset me. We were no such thing as Mackems then. It's like in the army. When I went in the army, anybody from Middlesbrough up to Berwick, you're a Geordie. You're a Geordie. Never upset me. And anyway, this little tubby little thing came in. Dressed in a suit, and this gorgeous girl came in, and they looked a bit weird, but I didn't anybody. And one of the lad, Fatty Gibbs, and I used to get on the stage there and sing me songs, you know, and because I used to entertain them on the bus, mind, on the army song, what have you. And Broke stopped me just the other day and didn't recognise him. And he was the manager in some shop. He said, oh, no, in the post office this week. I had to post a letter. He said, George, I used to be on your bus with your songs. I said, did you? I loved that going away. I mean, I got on the West Brom stage on there and I used to like to go to the Throstle Club and entertain them, sing, who's the greatest centre-half in all the world? You know, Charlie Early songs. Plus one or two bawdy ones.
You remember all those, though, don't you? Because he was singing those every week. Remember all the words.
I remember the words. I did do, anyway.
How good of a footballer was Charlie Hurley? Because obviously a lot of fans
Honestly, my hero. Funny enough, about a couple of years ago, this voice, is that you, George? It's not Bobby Kurtz. No, don't recognise the voice. He said, who's your hero, George? Oh, I said, Charlie. He said, who's your second hero? I said, Bawley. He said, it's Bawley speaking. I said, are you thinking? Are you great, lad, Bawley, Kevin Bawley, lad. Just, I like the caliber. He's tough, you know, a good leader. You know, we never seem to have that sort of captain anymore. You know, we don't seem to have somebody bawling out you, because he would tell them what to do. Otherwise, you kick him up a height.
A bit like Catamore, I suppose, he's the closest.
Oh, he's great. But, I used to have a canny voice then, but it's starting to go now. But I loved my songs, man. Charlie Hurley, who's the greatest centre-half in all the world today? Charlie Hurley. Another time I went to Cardiff, got on the stage there and singing these songs, and a lad called Tommy Lynn. His father used to have a radio in my shop. He always says, Geordie, you're a legend, you are. I said, oh, yeah. And the people, just recently, over the last 2 years at Sunderland here, we've got this lad called Stephen Keir, who deals with programmes. And he used to have a season ticket here at Sunderland at one time, but the administration let him down badly and he fell out with them. But he comes up to some programmes. So when he knew, he brought me this autograph of Jimmy McElroy, you know, to torn out of an autograph book.
Jimmy McElroy was your hero,
Jimmy McElroy was my hero. And he said, would you like to go there, George? I said, yeah, I would like to go back to Burnley. Because I had been in the 70s when we played about three or four times. This was off with the weather and off different things. And I'd like to say I was changed. And he picked me all the way from Wetherby. And we went and dropped in his house to change into a suit. And he said, we're going to see
Newcastle. This season.
It was just an accident, really, because you just happened to pick that game.
Is that the Monday night game?
We're playing Newcastle,
yeah.
There could be 2-1. But if I was supposed to be meeting
Gary Rowell.
But he told me at Phoebus, he said, oh, he's not going to be here, he's on his holidays. But it was great. We went. He went corporate, and Gary Rowell was there with his son, who plays in a band. Didn't nothing look his father, he had beard and all this sort of stuff. But it was nice meeting him. And also later on that night, oh, by the way, I had to stand up because in their programme against Newcastle, they had me on the middle page because I'd got this award and there was a write-up about me. And I bet the Newcastle people would be thinking, what the heck's he in there for? But and then later on, Dennis Hewitt came along and then we made our way home and I enjoyed it anyway, because it changed Burnley so much. So the pitch was perfect. I was hoping at least they would get a draw, but the Newcastle were pretty good that night.
Yeah, Burnley were. I watched that game. Burnley were terrible.
I couldn't just put it away. I wouldn't care. That chances, but they're in a bad position than Wander Burnley, but I did want to see them do better. But as for that award, I must go back on that about 2 or 3 years ago. I think Rob Mason had an awful lot to do with it, who did the programme, because he wrote a tremendous article about me and what I'd done for Sunderland supporters and had to go. The club played for the train fare and the taxis, I think, but it was in the Hilton. And when, at the bottom, I went with my son-in-law, and as I went in, there's a great big poster with me there. And I said, my God, Father, huge poster. But on the night, Bawley and it went on the stage with me to get this wonderful EFL trophy. It was a great honour. But I did want to have a word with Barry Fry. Because Barry Fry had done he was at the Roker Hotel. And funny enough, I got talking to Barry, telling him when I was down at Peterborough. And I was disappointed because he went on the stage, but then he drifted to the far in the Hilton that stage. And when I came looking for him, he'd already gone. But since then, we've got a branch at Peterborough. I've had it for donkey's years. And somebody brought me a Barry Fry book and I've read it. What a character he was. He's absolutely fantastic.
Colourful guy,
oh,
isn't he?
Oh, sure, colourful guy. But that's Barry Fry. But I've got all these books. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do with them all because some haven't a chance to read. Got them all signed by different players. But
do they get your name right when they announce? Because that's one thing, all the years I've known you, that various people and colleagues in the media as well always refer to you as George Foster. And I always get really irked by it because you're Forster, aren't you?
Forster, yes.
It's one of those names, you know.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
They get it right.
But
like
the reason why I signed things George W. Forster is because there was somebody who lives very near me, not as old as me, but I once wanted an extra ticket for somebody for a game, and that had his on the ticket on the little receipt thing. It was this other fella. So I said he was a George Foster as well. So that's the reason I put a sign over W now. The worst thing you can do is put your name, get your name put on, because you can't sell it. moving on, where are we?
Since I've got a few
quick fire question.
Yeah, quick one. I was quick. You mentioned Alan Brown.
Why I didn't like him was I came off night shift and hadn't been to bed. I had my breakfast because I used to have to do the blinking mail for my son and John. And Sand Close used to do these wonderful photographs because he started off like me with a box camera. I took that to Africa. I've just been looking through the thing and I marvel at what I did when with this album. There's a drone of the Gold Coast. Oh, but there we are. Anyway, I had to give again the player. When you get my age, your name's starting to disappear. That's a sad thing about it. But I had to give him these photos because I missed them at the training session and it was in the afternoon. And bounding down the stairs with Alan Brown, I said, "Good morning." I said, "Good morning, Mr. Brown. You're not very bright today, are we?" He said, "It's afternoon time." I said, "Yeah, saw it to myself." And that's why I didn't like him very much. But I don't, but Charlie thinks the world of him. He was probably a good manager. But, I mean, he treated them like boys, like, you know, these were men, you know. And no, I didn't particularly like
him. You liked Sam Allardyce, though, didn't you?
I like Big Sam, aye, aye. Well, we had a crack man, Big Sam. He was great, lad.
Which ground did you prefer? Do you prefer the current stadium or do you prefer Roker Park?
Oh, well, I suppose you've got to move with the times. I mean, crikey. I mean, when many times if you're down below the... anybody spilled in, they would come through the wooden boards, you know? Mm-hmm. No, and the toilets, well, no. We just got to move with the times and... I was a rebel this time. I wanted to stay at Roker Park. There was somebody set up a phone station at Roker Park. You know, plans were drawn, you know, and what they were going to do. And Bob Murray wanted this thing. And there was a model made who was going to be a Nissan. Mm-hmm. And I said, "That's no good to me, going up to Nissan." Like, I said, "I'm going to get up there." Although I did have a car, I think, then. And Brown pleased it. It didn't. But there's a time when it did get built that, you know, well, what's the progress of it? I would have been down to Middlesbrough because they'd done their stadium. We're taken down there. And I thought, Bob, 40,000 seater stadium to myself. You don't, well, when you get about 18,000, 20,000 at one time, you know. But I had a discussion on the radio, through the radio down to the office. Or because Don Henderson was a Don. He was the MP for Newcastle, objected to Sunderland getting this for nothing, the stadium. But it took so many minutes to get that site cleared, you know. So, and I weighed into him and all, and I said, "Well, look, they were going to put factories there." And I got somebody who worked in the town, in the council. Loads of empty factories at the time, so why more factories? And the ground wouldn't be fit for housing, for gardens, with all the pollution. So I'm just pleased Bob did what he did. But then Bob gave us a task. This would be in 1999. I'm trying to think of the year.
Moved in 1997.
Yeah. Well, got a task. The big painting of the team of all the talents of Corner Kick, which you see in the entrance, got a letter from Bob. "There's no time limit," he said. "I'd like to think that the supporters could pay for being refurbished, you know. And as far as I know, it went to Birmingham, it went somewhere else and somewhere else. So I don't actually know now who did it. But I know I had to write a book. No, Billy wouldn't help me. Billy Simmons, who was our records officer, brilliant he was at his job. And I wrote, I did this book all on my own, a booklet, and we sold them for £1 each. And that money went there. Wrote all the players, Audrey and I wrote, night after night we wrote to players, got money from them. And I've still got the receipt book. If somebody gives £5, they've got a receipt. Mm-hmm. And then we got... 7,000, I think it was, for it. And the last payment was from a lad in Kenya, Richard Woodall. He was a designer of golf clubs. At school, they all had to pick a team, and he picked Sunderland. He'd never been before in his life. Never been. But so he wanted to know if I wanted to borrow any money. I said, no, we've got it. We've got it. But because he said, you can have it loan free to pay for this painting. But he's been two or three times up. Well, when the painting was finally restored, it went in the museum. What upset me more than anything else about that was all the, you know, we were the people, we sort of got pushed back. Bobby Gurney was there, the front players and that. And I thought, well, you better you've done now to it, for it. But, you know, I felt as if we deserved to be seen anyway more, you know, just, but then I got put on the wall. But I say that the frame was a bit falling off the gold, whatever it is. So I think it could do was touching up. But we've got the money. I'm proud of that. But since then, we used to sponsor two players' kits, about 1,500 will there be. That's for everything, you know. But now, more recent times, it's only one. It's all on my phone now. It's getting ripped off by this company. It's greedy. I can't stand greed. No.
What's your best memory of Roker Park? What's the best game you saw at Roker Park?
Oh, I've seen a few of mine.
You got to pick one.
Oh, the pick one? Yeah. The game against Manchester City.
I thought that would be the one.
Oh, what a game.
Why that game? Everyone always talks about the atmosphere, isn't it?
Man, it was just great, man. Billy Hughes on song. Billy. Big Allen, I love Big Allen. He came back to Sunderland, you know. Been here, came in our office, and spent all the morning there. He's just big. When they got to Wembley, Billy Hughes, I don't really remember it, on the road. Well, they had this. Billy Hughes had this squeaky toys when they were getting interviewed, you know. He kept. they couldn't stop themselves from laughing. But if you ask the players, they were so relaxed. I mean, I know they came in the south, and they didn't come in the south like Leeds did. And I think it was just one of them games. It was just up for it. I mean, the game against Arsenal at Hillsborough, that was a hell of a game. That was a good game. I was lucky. I had a good boss when I went to David Brown's. I was a peripheral grinder, starting from an office worker, being a peripheral grinder. I was always having my head down and working like I did at Peterborough. I got merit money because I was such a good worker, being honest with you.
What's your memories of the cup final, 73?
Oh, well, I could have blown the whistle after Porterfield scored 31 minutes, 31 seconds. So I gather. But Porterfield. Just the way it went. But that Billy Hughes was my man of the match again. Dennis Stewart was very quiet, I thought. Didn't say enough of the ball, but that's the way it was. But on this flank, they helped one another. Dick Malone, Bobby Kerr. Bobby was brilliant, man. Bobby, little Bobby. I like Bobby. I like them all because that's another big honour I got, which I'll never forget. I'm an ordinary member of the senior citizens. They've got their own committee. And when I went over this time, it was Stan Anderson was there. He was selling his book, you know, and he was there. But what was Monty doing there? Well, we jumped to get guest speakers. Monty was there. Bobby Kerr. I said, what the heck are all these doing? Anyway, there was October meeting. My birthday was on the 7th. And they said, the chairman said, we've got somebody here whose birthday is here, and I've got somebody who wants to do this presentation. And I said, well, it's my birthday. It wasn't dead on the birthday day, but it was. I had to go up and get this, got a certificate off them, made me like an honorary, not a player, because I've never played football. Yeah. I've wear glasses since I was 7, so... No, I just enjoyed my life. It's a bit strange now, too many games now, I kind of keep up with them. I kind of don't see.
I struggle to keep up. I can't remember the games earlier this year.
46 league ones a season.
I think I thought once or twice that some of our players are getting a bit leggy as well. And I thought too many games, because football's different to me when I watch, you know, the old timers, and I, because it wasn't, it seems as if it's all about pace. You need a flying winger or something like that nowadays. But
final one to sign off. Who's your favourite Sunderland player ever?
I've got to say Charlie Hurley. If you ask Monty who it was, Monty would tell you who it would be. It would be Dave Watson. I think the trouble with Charlie was he cutted out a lot of things out which Monty should be getting. You know, he was heading them out because he's got that sort of head. But he's great. I always get a good Christmas card off him and his wife, Joan. Well, I was there for the 40th. No, let's get this right. I got an invitation for the London branch's 40th anniversary in the Black Cat Bar. And when I went, it's not really a thing of anybody doing any talk, it was sort of like that.
It's long.
But anyway, funny enough, there's a lady, was the vice president, Denise Robertson. I got talking to her, telling her different stories and a little funny, amusing bits in it. And she said, George, you must write a book. Because she was a loose woman and all this. I don't care, I've got a photograph on my little table, but let's find the time.
Yeah.
I mean, last week, the match was on Tuesday night. Wednesday night, we were meeting in the club. Thursday night was my mess night, the services night. And then Friday, no. But other things, anyway. A little song? Do you want a little song?
Good way of signing off.
Yeah. Go on, give us a little turn.
There once was a farmer who sat on a rick, shouting and screaming and waving his fist at some sailors who sat on some rocks, teaching young children to play with their kite strings and marbles, as in days of yore, when along came a lady who looked like a decent young lady but walked like a duck. Said she had found out a new way to educate her children to sew and to knit, while the boys in the farmyard were shoveling straw from the stables and mud from the byre, while the lord of the manor was pulling his horse from the stables to go to the hunt, while the wife in her boudoir was powdering her face and arranging her vanity box, taking precautions to ward off the gout and rheumatics which left her quite stiff after just having her last dose of what did you think I was going to say, you nasty old rascal, then go on your way.
That's a good way to sign off. Thanks, George, for coming on. Thanks, Nick, for sharing your afternoon with us. Yeah, it was good speaking to you and Alex. It was a pleasure.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDak, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDak is changing for the better. For the better, like you. BetDak, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.